May it please the court. My name is Doyle Baker. I'm a deputy district attorney from the 4th Judicial District in Colorado Springs. I represent the people in this appeal. The Federal Controlled Substances Act prohibits the possession and distribution of marijuana for almost every purpose. And included in that is medicinal purposes. The federal act is incompatible with Colorado law, which authorizes medical use. But Colorado law does not merely authorize what federal law prohibits. In the case of the provision that we're looking at today, it requires law enforcement officials to return marijuana to people who have had it for medical purposes and thereby violate the federal prescription against possession and distribution.
Are you attacking the medical marijuana amendment on any ground other than the provision that deals with returning the substance?
Your Honor, we're not today. That was our argument below, that we're focused exclusively on the obligation that the act or the amendment imposes on law enforcement. And in that context, where you have a direct command saying you need to distribute this marijuana, we believe that there's a conflict there, and under a conflict preemption analysis, specifically the obstacle prong, that that provision has to be preempted by the Controlled Substances Act.
So you're not arguing any of the species of preemption other than obstacle preemption?
No, and that was the argument that we presented to the district court, was relying primarily on the Emerald Steel case, and that's the argument that we're making here today.
Okay.
However, as part of that, certainly you look at what the language of the particular provision says, and this particular provision, we believe, when you read it, is a direct command to violate what the federal act prohibits.
Why doesn't the exception in 885D remove your characterization of distribution in violation of federal law?
Well, the immunity provision for state and local law enforcement is what you're referring to. And I think that there are three reasons really why it doesn't apply. One is that it talks about law enforcement officers being lawfully engaged in the enforcement of a law, and distributing marijuana isn't lawful. And it can't be that when Congress enacted the CSA, that's what they intended to say.
Well, there are cases applying 885D dealing with what the feds call a reverse sting operation. In other words, where the undercover
right.
agent will sell a small quantity of drugs in the hope of working the way up the chain and busting a larger distributor. I mean, isn't that equally inimical to federal law to distribute a small quantity of drugs as it is to give it back to a patient?
I don't think it is in the eyes of Congress, and I think also, Your Honor, that it's incompatible with the language of that subsection, which talks about the enforcement, being lawfully engaged in the enforcement of the law. And here, CSPD would not be enforcing any law. In other words, they would be compelling anyone else to do something. They would be complying with a law, a state law requiring them to do something.
Aren't you leaving out the related to phrase in the sentence? I mean, it could have been drawn more narrowly, but it says related to.
Related to controlled substances.
Yes.
Right. But the question, I think, is are they lawfully engaged? I mean, we're talking about controlled substances, including marijuana and presumably anything else under the Controlled Substances Act. But this is not lawful enforcement. This is a violation of what the CSA prohibits. And I'd also add that immunity, to the extent that this would convey it to the police, doesn't decriminalize the conduct. It just provides them the protection from prosecution. You still have them doing something that Act did not intend, and that is distributing, and at the end of the day, they're distributing marijuana for medical purposes. So to the extent they could get immunity under this provision, if it in fact would apply, it doesn't undermine, I think, the fact that it's still an obstacle to the intent of Congress, which was to keep medical marijuana or marijuana for medical purposes out of the hands of anyone for any reason.
Mr. Baker, for a preemption analysis, don't we have to consider the entire statute, including the immunity provision? It's almost as if you're suggesting we should consider them individually and not as a whole.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't quite catch what you said there.
Is it your premise that we consider the entire statute together for preemption analysis purposes?
The CSA immunity provision?
CSA. No, right. Not just the immunity provision, the entire CSA.
I think so. You have to look at the act as a whole. I think that there are other parts of the act that say you shall not distribute, you shall not use, and part of the structure of the way the act is set up is the schedules for drugs, and marijuana is a Schedule I drug, and the case law and everything else is clear that under Schedule I, you cannot dispense marijuana or whatever drug is under Schedule I for a medical purpose. So,
pardon me, Mr. Baker.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'd like to ask you three questions about 885D, if I may, please.
All right.
The first, does it concern immunity from liability or immunity from suit?
Well, it talks about immunity from civil and criminal liability. So I would presume that what that means is that under federal law, you cannot be subject to criminal prosecution, you cannot be subject to a civil lawsuit.
All right. The second question is there immunity from injunctive activity in 885D? If a court issues an injunction to the police, does that provide immunity?
Go ahead. I don't see anything in there that would talk about immunity from injunctive relief. I guess you're talking about someone who's in possession of marijuana seeking an injunction against the police, or?
No, a federal court says don't return the pot. It issues an order saying don't return the pot.
Well, I think in that case, then you've got the conflict between what Colorado statute says and what the federal court is ordering. And consistent with preemption, I think that the federal application of the law would control in that instance. If I were a police officer, however, I'd be a little worried about how the district court in the state might view that, I think. So I don't know how that would play out necessarily.
I'm sorry. Based on your first answer, I only have two questions. So.
Okay. All right. The trial court in its order found that there was no obstacle, and there were a couple of things that it said that I'd like to address. One is that there's no conflict here because Colorado law doesn't impact the enforceability of federal law. There's nothing in the Colorado Amendment that requires or attempts to impede the federal executive branch from enforcing the law. Our position is that misses the point. Certainly, if there were such a provision, it would be sufficient to cause an obstacle and create a preemption issue, but we don't believe that that is necessary for there to be obstacle preemption. The test is the will of Congress being thwarted here? And in this case, we believe that it is, regardless of whether there's any attempt to step on the toes of the executive branch and keep them from enforcing their law.
Did you get a copy of our order that we got out yesterday asking you to be prepared to address the DOJ memo?
I did receive that.
All right.
I don't know if there were any specific questions.
Yes, I did have a specific question.
Okay.
For purposes of obstacle preemption, do we look at only the language of the statute like we might as a strict elements analysis of a criminal statute? Or do we look at other evidence, including the Fed's announced position on enforcement in the DOJ memo?
Well, I think that the memo, the bottom line, does not change our position, which is that...
Well, my question was a little different. I mean, and I respect that you, that may be your point, but for purposes of obstacle preemption,
yes,
do we just look at the plain language of the statute, no matter what the people in charge of it enforcing it are saying, or do we look at the plain language of the statute through the prism of what DOJ is saying is going to be its enforcement priorities?
I think you can go beyond the statute if you find that it's not applying. Our position would be that it does not apply because the immunity provisions, because we're dealing with a situation where we're asking police to violate federal law, and regardless of whether there's immunity given to them, there's still a violation of federal law by requiring them to distribute the drug. However, certainly you can look at what the Department of Justice policy is in this, and I think what I took away from that memo is they're looking for robust enforcement from local law enforcement authorities, and they're also hoping that their particular concerns, the eight that they identified, are going to be taken care of by whatever federal or state regulations are in place. I think that my reading it had some concerns about whether Colorado's amendment is going to achieve that. And I'll just mention a couple of things. I think that even if we have a regulatory system in place in Colorado, it's going to be difficult to keep marijuana out of the hands of minors under this provision. I smoked my first and last cigarette when I was 10 years old, and I didn't buy it at a store, and I didn't get it from a shady character on a street corner. I got it from my uncle's house, where he left his pack of cigarettes sitting on his kitchen counter. I think it's just common sense that if people can lawfully possess marijuana, it's going to get distributed, and minors are going to have easier access to it.
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Baker. I want to ask you this question before you run out of time. But in regard to the question that Judge Webb asked you about the federal approach, the DOJ approach, my understanding is that since 2009 there have been three of these memos, and they are somewhat different. Are you familiar with that?
I know that there were, well, based on this, I've heard that there was a memo that was released in 2009, which my understanding is opened the floodgates for medical marijuana. I'm not familiar with the specifics of it.
Well, I guess my question is this, and this goes back to Judge Webb's question about obstacle preemption. Should the issue of whether the federal government, in its discretion, chooses to forbear from certain types of enforcement have any effect on our obstacle preemption analysis?
Ultimately, no. That's a policy decision made by the executive branch of government. Every case I read about obstacle preemption talks about what was the intent of Congress and what was their purpose in enacting this provision. Now, the fact that the executive branch of the federal government is, as the memo indicated, doesn't have the resources to carry out the will of Congress, I don't think that changes things for us, because the executive branch can't or won't act does not mean that we can, in Colorado, enact a law that is contrary to the purposes of what the Congress intended, and we believe the clear purpose in this case was no medical marijuana, can't use it for any purpose. Based on that, we would ask that the trial court's ruling be disapproved. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Houghton. I am the attorney for Mr. Krause. Mr. Krause is doing this at the table along with my co-counsel, Mr. Clifton Black. The issue presented by this appeal is, does the Colorado law present an obstacle to the Federal Act's purpose? And in order to do that, you've got to whittle this down to its essence. The essence is, can we, as a state, allow what the federal government prohibits?
Isn't there a difference between what a state may allow versus what a state may order? I mean, here the police officer, law, whatever law enforcement agency is involved, has no choice. It has to give, at least on demand, it has to give the product back.
And I don't think so, Your Honor, and here's why. In the case of City of Garden Grove versus Kaw, K-H-A, which appears at 157 Cal at 4355, the court looked at that question, and in Oregon, the language from the case is, the city correctly notes that the Oregon law at issue, unlike California's medical laws, expressly requires a return to the defendant's cannabis if he's deemed to be a lawful user. However, the applicability of 21 U.S.C. 885D does not hinge on such a requirement. That statute makes law enforcement personnel immune from any civil or criminal liability arising out of the handling of a controlled substance as part of their official duties. So if the requirement to act is not the hinge for the immunity that the city apparently is concerned about, why would the affirmative act to have to return the product likewise make a difference in an obstacle analysis?
Well, this goes back to a question that Judge Dunn asked Mr. Baker. What's the chicken and what's the egg? Under obstacle preemption, do we consider 885D as part of the issue as to whether or not it is preempted, or do we take a look at 885D after we have taken a look at the preemption question to determine if in that circumstance there is some sort of immunity?
I don't think that it makes a difference whether you look at it as a before or an after kind of an argument. Either the police officer is immune or he's not. And again, calling on the Claw case, the court in that particular case kind of hit on, could a police officer who's operating under these, either an order to return it, or as the court pointed out, what if they were selling marijuana or selling a controlled substance to a defendant and hope to move up the daisy chain? The answer is the same, and that is that they don't have the requisite criminal intent in order to make them liable, even without the immunity. And a lot of this, quite frankly, is pure speculation, because neither the city nor I have been able to find a single case in the state of Colorado or anywhere, for instance, where a civil servant, a law enforcement official at any level, has ever been held or even suggested that they would be charged with a violation of the Controlled Substances Act simply because they returned marijuana, either with or without a court order.
So you would answer the question about whether or not federal government forbearance goes into the obstacle preemption analysis differently than Mr. Baker did.
Absolutely.
And I think when you look at
What do you base that? Well, when you look at obstacle preemption, you have to look at what's actually happening. You can't just look at the rule and say, okay, whatever you're doing is an obstacle to the intent of Congress in passing a statute. If there is a possibility that the federal law and the state law can coexist without an inconsistency, you have to look at the facts and circumstances that surround that to see whether or not there is an inconsistency. And the only way that you can do that is to look at facts and circumstances outside of the language of the particular statute. You have to look at what people are really doing. And I think that, you know, the other thing is that when we're looking at an obstacle analysis, one of the things we have to look at is, you know, was there intent of Congress to actually preempt the field in this in any way? And if you look at 21 USC 903, which sets forth the idea that this is not an area that they intended to preempt. And if you look at the memos that have come forth, the first one was October 19th of 2009, and it came from the Assistant Attorney General Ogden. And basically what that memo said was is that the United States government is not going to expend its time and resources in either investigating or prosecuting people that were in obvious compliance with state law. It was admittedly aimed at terminally ill patients or very ill patients. And so the question I believe that Judge Bernard asked was, is there an evolution of that theory through the memos? Every time another memo comes out, there was two issued in 2011, and then the latest one, August 29 of 2013. What the government has done is basically they've taken the idea that this is preempted kind of out of the mix, because if it had been preempted, they're doing a very, very poor job at the federal level of doing what they're supposed to do, and that is enforce federal law. What they've done is that they've said in states where medical marijuana, or in the latest memo, even recreational marijuana is being allowed, that so long as those eight federal standards that they espouse in the latest memo are being met, the federal government is not going to intervene. And they may even went in so far to say is that in the first memo, they differentiated commercial type activities as not being what they were talking about. Now, 2 years later, they say just because it's a commercial activity does not necessarily mean that it is going to be subject to prosecution. So long as the state government has a regulatory scheme that addresses their eight issues or doesn't go across the line with any one of their eight issues.
And certainly it would be possible that they could send out a memo in 2015 that said one of two things. A, we're not going to prosecute anybody in any state for using marijuana. Or they could issue a memo that says, we're backing off of all this. We're going to prosecute whomever you please. I mean, they could theoretically do either thing, right?
They could, but you have to look at the history of medical marijuana when you look at the federal component of this. This statute or constitutional amendment happened in the year 2000. They've had 14 years to take a look at it and say, either we mean it or we don't. Either we're going to allow marijuana or we're not. And if you look at all the rest of the states, they've had even longer periods of time or shorter periods of time to look at the same issue. And there are a number of things other than saying, yes, we really, really mean it, that they could do. They could withhold federal funding for roads and bridges. They could withhold fundings for No Child Left Behind. They could, any form of federal funding, they could say, go ahead and keep your marijuana, but we're not going to give you federal funding. It's never happened. And so if you look at the history of what's gone on, the federal government has had plenty of time to argue about this. Our state government has had plenty of time to raise this issue. Is it illegal under federal level, and how do you justify it being in existence here? To date, there has never been a challenge. And so if you just look at the history, yes, in 2015, they could say yes. But that would mean that they would have to look at the legislatures of 20 different states now, and our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., along with 100,000 or more patients in the state of Colorado alone, and say you're wrong.
Well, I think Judge Bernard's question is, you know, if we decide a preemption issue, I mean, is our decision ephemeral in the sense of, you know, another party could take the White House in 2015 and could change all this? So then we could rule in your favor today based on these memos, and Mr. Baker could be back here in 2015, albeit on a different case, making the same argument if a different party in the White House tore up all the memos and said our enforcement policy is scorched earth. I mean, doesn't a preemption analysis have to be more vibrant than that?
I don't think so, Your Honor, and the reason being is that if you look at that analysis, they could change the laws at any time.
Well, that's different. That's a different branch of government. I agree that that if Congress changed the law, then every preemption decision that relied on the prior text would have to be revisited. But I'm raising a different question, as I think was Judge Bernard. The law is the same, but the executive enforcement discretion is different.
That's true, Your Honor.
Well, agree. Well, doesn't that, if we make a preemption decision on that basis, and don't we potentially have to revisit it every time the executive branch articulates different enforcement priorities?
As you would if they changed any law.
No, the executive branch doesn't change laws.
No, I understand. I understand. But I mean, if Congress were to change the law and said it was fine, then does that mean that you would have to revisit every marijuana prosecution that's taken place because now it's legal? I don't think so.
Okay.
So, I think really what we have to do is we have to do a paradigm shift in the way that we look at this stuff, okay? If you take a strictly preemption type argument, then you are stuck with what all the courts that you've read their opinions about come up with. And depending on which jurisdiction you are in and what court you're talking about, some of them will say, yes, you have to return the marijuana, or no, you can't be prosecuted for it. And others say the exact opposite, looking at the same exact statute. I think what you have to look at now in light of the memo that came out just recently, the August 29th memo, is it's not whether or not they're going to enforce the law. They just said, we're not going to enforce the law. And in that memo, they recognize that they don't ever enforce the law, that they have traditionally relied on states to monitor their own criminal activity, their own marijuana activity. That's what the memo says. So the shift in looking at it is, does the state regulatory model meet with what the federal government has announced as saying, if you meet this model, that it is a strong regulatory model, that you're willing to enforce it, that you're willing to monitor the people that are involved in it, that you meet our 8 standards. If you do that, we are never going to step in. It's only if you don't meet those standards that we will come forward and say it's a federal problem now. And so instead of examining it under the traditional, has it been preempted, you have to look at it as, does this state have that model? And if you look at 12-43.3-101, which is the Colorado Medical Marijuana Code, and 1243.4, which is the Colorado Retail Marijuana Code, you will find that it is, without a doubt, the most stringent, the most heavily monitored, the toughest to get into regulatory model for any industry in this state. Do we meet the requirements under this latest memo in spades? without a doubt. We have met that. Every one of those standards have been addressed by our legislature in the legislation that they put forward. This medicine can only be given to people who are patients, who have been seen by a licensed physician. We have a nanogram per limit driving exception. There's no requirement that either a landlord or any other employer accommodate the use of it. In order to get into this particular industry, every square inch of your property is monitored. Have we met the standard? Absolutely. And that's the new paradigm. Have we met their standard? Clock's going the other way now. Does that mean I get more?
No, I mean, it means you owe us time. Both counsel have exhausted their time. The case stands submitted. We'll issue a written opinion in due course. Counsel are excused.